originating from our Jimmy John's of Lexington studios. This is Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
But it was all for Chuck McGee. Super Sabre wins the Derby for Todd Fletcher.
Basalt will give trainer Steve Asmussen career win number 6,000.
It was all have another for Doug O'Neill.
Oxbow and D-Wayne Lucas. Trainer D-Wayne Lucas, a sixth win.
And Al's Rosie is going to give trainer Gary Contessa his 2,000th career win.
And Dialed In never got to them. It was Animal Kingdom for Graham Motion.
Steve Hobby with career victory number 1,000 at Oaklawn.
Now here's Mike Pena and Jude Feld.
Hello again, everyone, and welcome to Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton on the Horse Racing Radio Network, the show trainers listen to. Mike Pena, Baron of the Backstretch, along with the Pontiff of the Pick Four, Jude Feld, in our Jimmy John's of Lexington broadcast studios. And want to welcome everybody tuning in throughout North America on Sirius 219 XM Channel 206, and all of you tuning in worldwide with our live streaming and podcast on your computer, your mobile device, at horseracingradio.net. Happy to have you with us for the course of the next hour as JT, once again, we focus on a trainer who is just getting started with his career, but man, has he been around some outstanding trainers in his days.
Yeah, well, it's always great to have the young guys on and trainers just starting their career so people know who they are. Sometimes somebody wants a young and up-and-coming trainer and they get to put the face with the name and learn some things, and hopefully we can spur a little commerce.
Well, it's been a while since you were in that position, kind of launching your operation out in California, but you remember the struggles and some of the things that you go through when you're just getting things started?
Oh, yeah. I was a young and up-and-coming trainer once. Now I'm a has-been. So, it's an exciting time when you first get your stable together and you're very gung-ho, and hopefully that can continue for a long time. It continued for me for 20 years.
Yeah, sure. Well, tonight's guest, a 33-year-old native of France by the name of Rodolphe Brisé, and he's only had 6 starters to date. He's had one winner. That came last Thursday, June 15th, at Churchill Downs, a horse by the name of Lady Soul getting the victory that afternoon, and Rodolphe gracing the winner's circle for the first time on his own. But make no bones about it, this is a guy who spent some time around some good ones. He spent 2 years as an assistant to trainer Patrick Biancone. That was followed by nearly a decade of working with Hall of Fame trainer Bill Mott as his top assistant. And Rodolphe is kind enough to spend some time with us here on Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton. Rodolphe, welcome, my friend.
Hi, guys.
Yeah, happy to have you on board here, and looking forward to hearing your story. And first of all, let's start with a special congratulations on that first win. Well done.
Well, thank you. You know, I guess you need to get this one out the way, and then from there now we can look for many more, I guess.
Yeah, look back on that day. Of course, only last Thursday. It wasn't that long ago. Tell me about the experience of watching your horse cross the finish line first.
Well, to be honest, like I've been saying to a couple of people, you know, when you work for a team like Bill Mott, you kind of get used to win races. So I guess the fact, it was more for me the fact that Julian was on her, you know. He's my best friend, and we've been here in America since day one together, and he became one of the best jockey in America, and then so to see him grow and, you know, to be that close and having him on the filly I trained, I was very happy. Now, you know, of course my name is in the chart as a trainer, so I was happy for that too, but not really, you know, just happy for everybody, for the team, for me, and then not really a big special feeling. It just that's what we do. So, you know, you run horses to expect to win. So
I'm not sure I'm buying that. Sorry, man. I don't know if I buy that. Come on. Yeah, you win a lot of races with Bill Mott, but this one's the first one that you had since going out on your own in early April. That had to be a little more special. It's, you make it sound so nonchalant.
It was special, but not as much as what people were expecting. You know, it's it's at the end of the day, we've been doing that for many years, and as an assistant trainer for those big athletes, you should put yourself into it like if they are your own. So the feeling can pretty much the same. I'm not trying to be a smart ass, but you know, it's just I really think it's we put so much into it, even if it's not for us, like our name, and that's why all those big athletes, they are very, very successful, because they get people put into it like if they are their own horse, you know. And I think it was a mix of a little bit everything. Of course, I was happy because that was my first winner, but I would say all together, it was more a combined thing between the fact is Julian and for my team, people has been with me for 2 months, and you know, it's not long, but they've been with us since the beginning. So I was happy for everybody. Let's put it this way.
Would you say that you came into being a trainer with a lot of expectations? There's a lot of people that have been talking about you for months and couldn't wait for you to go out on your own. They have respect for you as a horseman already. So did that add any pressure to you starting out?
I would say yes, a little bit. I mean, I definitely picked my spot. I was not going to run just to run. That was really my, you know, and I was pretty clear with the owner, the people who support me since the beginning. I told them, I said, you know, of course people have, you know, I mean, I'm hoping with my past and what, you know, everything I've been building to the point where I start on my own, I hope people have a big expression, because I have myself, you know, I put myself a lot of pressure on myself to, I need to be successful, you know. It's a transition. It's not that easy to, you know, the transition between the assistant trainer and the trainer, but so yeah, it was, you know, there was, I think they have some expectation behind me, and then he put a little more pressure, but it's a good pressure, you know, that makes you get up in the morning at 4 and go to work, you know.
Rodolph, you could have gone out on your own a few years ago, and you waited until this moment. How come?
I don't think I was ready. You know, I think I got mature late. You know, I mean, I would say I learned so much being around Mr. Mott, and then Liana, who she's the assistant trainer in Belmont, are really the two best horsemen I work with. And I wasn't ready. You know, it was that feeling where even if the age was getting, you know, I was 30, past 30, who people said usually you gotta try. I was just not ready, I think. But you know, over those years, I learned a lot to, you know, looking at what Mr. Mott do. My job was, I got a really good job for Bill, because I was the assistant trainer, but I was the traveling assistant trainer too, and I got lucky enough to work with every barn. So I was moving between Florida, Kentucky, and New York. So to see different ways to work with different assistant trainers and working as a team, I learned a lot. So, you know, I think the main reason was really not ready, not mature enough. And then you know, I met my fiance, and then the past year and a half, things got very quick, you know, like, things change, and then, you know, I got the talk with the boss last August, and then we set up everything for start April 1st, you know.
When you were growing up in France, were you interested in the horse business then?
Oh, well, yeah, I've been riding since I'm 5. I've been riding thoroughbred since I'm 12. I mean, I start, my dad gambled like races, like was gambling races, and then I just got really hooked to it. I mean, I'm, you know, that's the only thing, you know, I quit school, normal school, when I was 13 to go to the jockey school in France. Got, you know, lucky enough, I guess I would say, you know, good enough to ride some races at the point where I got too heavy. But, you know, it's I mean, I can live without without a horse around me for a week or so.
What was your vision of your life to be a trainer in France, or did you think you'd come to America and win your first race?
I guess, you know, what was the most difficult thing was to admit I could ride races anymore in France. It's very difficult to do that jump, like when you're too heavy and you have to make the jump, like said, okay, now I have to stop riding races, but what I'm going to do, I didn't know exactly, you know, which direction to get when I stopped riding races. So I took a year, kind of year off, just galloping on the morning. And then I was going to actually head to Australia first when Mr. Biancon kind of called me and offer a job here. And it didn't take me long. I mean, after a month here, I totally fell in love with this country. It's just, that was the first thing. Like, you know, I love the living style. I love the racing. I love the dirt racing. So, you know, it's where after a month here, that's where I, you know, and Julian was, you know, not even riding races yet. And, you know, we kind of talk with Julian and he told me, he said, I want to ride races. So, you know, I try to teach him what I know. And then even if, you know, he's gifted, he doesn't really need me. But I think just the fact to be with him and, you know, try to give some advice, what I experienced before, it was just, you know, it was everything got together at the right time, you know.
Talking with Rodolph Brisé here on Trainer Talk presented by Phasic Tipton. Rodolph, you've mentioned Julian Leperoux's name a couple of times now, and you mentioned that your first win was special because of the fact that your good friend Julian was aboard last week at Churchill Downs. How did that relationship begin with you and Julian? Is it simply because you're both from France? Is that how it started?
Not really, actually. I'm a very good friend with his sister, who I know her from France. And I didn't know Julian very well, actually, until I arrived here in Lexington in 2005. You know, when Patrick Biancon called me, Julian was very... not putting pressure on Patrick, but he told Patrick to make sure he tried to get me, I guess because of my past as a rider and, you know, like a rider in the morning and rider in the afternoon too. So, you know, they give a good warm to Patrick to try to get me here. And then when I got here, you know, it just, we got a connection right away. And, really, the fun part was the day Adrian walked to me and said, hey, I want to ride races. I want to be a jockey here. And, you know, and I say, okay, you know, the fact that Christophe Soumillon in France is a good friend of mine too. You know, I was his agent in France for a little while. So all that experience between being a jockey and the exercise rider and an agent, you know, in the horse business, you have to learn every aspect of that job. Of that business, you know, like if you can do a little bit of everything, you're in good shape, you know. So I think we just connect right off the bat. We really, really have a good connection, and then I mean, to see Julian grow the way he grew, it was you know, you're happy, you know, when your best friend get that successful, you know.
What makes guys like Christophe Soumillon and Julian Leperoux so good?
They're gifted, you know, they have it. I would say some people, you know, like, I mean, I'm pretty good as a rider on the morning. I was not that good in the afternoon. It's very difficult when you have people telling you over and over, oh, you're good. And then you actually realize you're not that good. But you got to admit it, you know, sometimes you better be a good exercise rider, making good things with horses in the morning and make them win grade one, than try to be a jockey when you can't. You know, it's two different things. And I'm sure some of the jockeys are better jockey in the afternoon than they can gallop a horse. You know, and I saw that before. You know, even if I'm young, like I say, I've been in different country. I work different style between, you know, dirt and grass. And I would say those two guys, they're really gifted, you know,
We always talk about in the United States that if you're a good jockey, you're a terrible exercise rider, and if you're a good exercise rider, you're probably a terrible jockey. So it kind of goes hand in hand, and I'm sure you know that from experience around the racetrack. It seems like you know, they call the Coolmore boys the Irish Mafia. It seems like now we've got kind of the French Mafia going with Giroux and Pratt and Leparoux and you know, you're here and you know, the other more established guys like Christophe Clément. The French influence on American racing is really becoming prominent.
Well, I think those three jocks, they've really, I mean, of course, Mr. Clément is, you know, is well known and is established here. But I think those three jocks, they really, Julian First and Florent and Flavien, those three, they really, really, I think they're really carrying the French flag around America. And, you know, and Julian really never rode a race in France. So he really learned the dirt, you know, learned how to ride the dirt here. And it took a little while, but those guys, Florent and Flavien, he was a little bit more, he was a little bit more difficult for them, I would say, because they are already established in France as a grass rider, and the dirt is not the same to ride the dirt air. So those two guys, it took them a little longer to get to the point where they are now. But I think that's you know, that's trifecta. It's they have a lot of quality and they are good rider, you know.
You said that you really enjoyed the dirt racing. You're the first person from Europe I've ever heard say that they enjoyed dirt racing when they came to the United States. Why is that?
Well, that's actually a very good question, because my answer can clear that very quick. Is as a rider, and the fact that I was able to ride a lot of good horses on the dirt for Bill, who I know a lot of people think, Mr. Mott is a grass trainer, but that's not true. You know, I think the last 5 or 6 years, we won, you know, they won more dirt Breeders' Cup than turf Breeders' Cup. So I think I can tell you one thing is you have nothing better and no better feeling than a breather horse 5'8" on the dirt when he's a Grade 1 winner. That give me chill every time. So, you know, I mean, I can give you names, and you know, of course, Royal Delta would be the first one, but between her and Two Honor and Serve and Flat Out and Drosselmeyer, all those horses, they give you chill when you. I mean, it's a different feeling, and I love it. So that's why I'm a pro dirt. I love the dirt, and I will give everything to have a Grade 1 winner on the dirt before a Grade 1 winner on the grass. I can tell you that.
That's really interesting. I got to ask you, were you aboard Royal Delta for her final work before the Breeders' Cup at Churchill Downs?
Yeah,
were?
I don't know. Yeah, when she won the first Breeders' Cup, you mean?
When she won the Distaff at Churchill Downs?
Yeah, when she was three. Yeah, I was on there, and that was 47-1, and I can give you every second of it, the breeze, if you want a detail. You know, I remember like it was yesterday.
Well, me too. That was the most beautiful workout I have ever seen in my entire life. I talk about it all the time. It gave me chills. I can only imagine you're on the horse. I mean, it was so beautiful.
She came home in 22-4, and you know, we just got beat by what is her name? Ava de Grasse, I think. In a Bell Dam, and that's, you know, we ship her to Churchill, and we train in Churchill for 3 weeks before the. But that breeze were amazing. I mean, give me, yeah, it was, yeah, you know, she came home on 22-4, and I remember just, you know, never move, never ask her anything, and she was something, you know.
Rodolphe, for those of us who have never had the opportunity to be on the back of a horse like Royal Delta, and in my case, on the back of any horse, walk us through that. You said you could remember every detail of that breeze. Walk us through what it's like to be in the saddle aboard a super, super horse like Royal Delta.
Well, you know, even if we look cool out there, it's a lot of pressure, I can tell you that. You know, it's we try to make it look easy, and we try to make it look like like, you know, we are relaxed and everything, but it's to be around those kind, it's way more difficult than it looks like. Sometimes, you know, you have to think ahead of everything. You know, like when the track get busy, you gotta protect the horse first. So, you know, sometimes people may have think I was maybe a little rude with some of the other rider, or we don't want to look arrogant, but you have to protect the horse. So, I can tell you, I was very, very protecting her, as much as I can. You know, it's so easy to get things wrong, you know, and it's so difficult to get a good horse. When you get one, you gotta take care of it like if it's your own child, almost. You know, it's passion, and it's a lot of pressure. But when you do that, usually you get rewarding. You know.
Did you ever think to yourself at any point in any of her breezes, man, I wish I could ride her back in the afternoon?
Oh, yeah, you have no idea. Actually, Max Smith got a very good, I think the second time she won the Delaware Handicap, the week before, she breezed half a mile. So we run her with no Lasix, so she was no Lasix on the morning too. And the boss said to me, well, try to go 48, you know, and it's our last breeze, and she went fast enough last week. And I was like, yeah, we'll try. And then, you know, I breeze her, I stop, and Liana came up to me with the pony, and she said that looked good. I said, yeah, that feels good too. I think I was okay, you know, 47 and change, 48, you know. And then we went by the clocker stand, and they looked at me and they said 45 and 4. And I was like, wow. And Mike actually know the breeze, he know the filly breeze that fast that day. And she won the Delaware Handicap by 12 legs. And when he came back, he said, my job is easier than yours because, you know, breathing her in the morning is way more difficult than rider in the afternoon. I kind of agree with that. So, yeah, it will be fun to be able to ride those kind in the afternoon. But like I say, I don't think I'm good enough anyway. So I will, you know, you gotta find your place. In that world, in that business, you got to find your place. And I think I find mine the day I work. I start to work for Bill, and I know what I want to do. And you know, riding in the morning, the horses, and then try to get my license and train them. So
she was so good; she'd probably win with you aboard in the afternoon.
Yeah,
it's what's underneath you that gives you the confidence.
How good she was, she may have won with me. Even with me, she may have won anyway.
You know,
yeah, I agree with that.
Sadly, Royal Delta lost her life due to foaling complications this past February. What do you remember about the day you got that news, Rodolphe?
Well, I think I got the news 5 days after because I think the boss was so scared to tell me. I was still working with Mr. Mott and the team, and I think he got the phone call on the same day and she passed. Didn't really mention it for a couple of days, and I did find out on Twitter first. And so I walked to him, and you know, you very classy as usual. He said, "Oh yeah, I may have forgot to tell you that." And but I think you try to don't get attached to them too much, but those one is very difficult to don't get attached to them. So it's very sad now. You got to see on every you know sad situation, you got to try to take the positive out of it. And I will say she got a beautiful Galileo baby, and I hope that filly can make us remember Royal for a long time, you know.
Talking with Rodolphe Brisse here on Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Rodolphe, only a few minutes left. We have to get to a commercial break here in just a few minutes. But before we do, what is it about a guy like Bill Mott? We talked about what makes jockeys so good, like Julian and Christophe Soumillon. What makes a guy like Bill Mott so good?
I mean, to my standing point, I would say experience and I think he when just to look at him. I mean, he look a lot, analyze a lot, and I think doesn't make any decision too quick. Yeah, it's a global thing. Like, it's a couple different things make him that's good, you know, as a Hoffman and even as a person, you know. I think, I saw before actually trainer be a good trainer, but not especially being a good Hoffman, who some people said I'm wrong when I say that, but I think it's two different things. Some people can train a horse, but doesn't mean they are a really good horseman. Bill Mott is one of, he's got both, that's for sure.
You were quoted as saying that at the end of the day, it may be actually easier to train on your own than to leave that Bill Mott team. How come?
I just, you know, you create a lot of, it's a family, you know. Yeah, you have to remember, you know, I mean, I came from France. I was 21 years old. You have no family here. Of course, you know, I fell in love with this country. You learn English, you make friends and everything. But at the end of the day, with how many hours we spend in the barn, your team, it's pretty much your family, and it's what you know. I got really close of everybody. And like I say, my job was very fun because I actually worked with every bounce from, you know, Churchill, New York, and Florida. So it's a big amount of people, and then, but you respect this as a, and we work as a team. So, you know, 10 years for in Europe, working 10 years for somebody, it's a long time, but it's very common. I know in America it's a little bit different, and if, you know, it was difficult to leave, but and you know, you should see me when I talk to Bill. I could barely put three words together, and I got a tear in my eyes just to ask him the permission to leave to go train on my own. So you can see how he was. No, it was pretty difficult for me. Just because it's a lot of memories. And I own the whole team. I own them. Where I'm standing right now, it's because of them. You know, it's maybe because of me a little bit, but it's because of them too. I mean, they put me, you know, they put me in front with all those good horses, and Bill always kind of let me deal with the press and, you know, television and all those things. So when the whole team put you that much in front, you know, you gotta. That means you're very close to them, you know, and I own them a lot, for sure, I think.
Yeah, very special relationship with Hall of Fame trainer Bill Mott and his entire team. We're visiting with Rodolphe Brisé here on Trainer Talk, presented by Phasic Tipton. Stay with us. We'll take a short break. We'll come back and talk more right after this. It's Trainer Talk, presented by Phasic Tipton.
Selected sales, superior results. The July sale, ranked among the top yearling sales in North America. 300 yearlings catalog. Starting with Champion Silver Bullet Day, Hall of Famer Bob Baffert has trained 8 Grade 1 winners that were sold at Phasic Tipton July.
Where were you being July?
The July sale and July selected horses of racing age sale. July 10th and 11th at Phasic Tipton in Lexington. Where will you be?
I know where I'll be. I'll be at Phasic Tipton July sale.
Bloom Racing.
Majestic City could also still do it, and here he comes.
Majestic City running a big one.
Started by former jockey and 35-year racing industry veteran Jeffrey Bloom, Bloom Racing offers racing partnerships, bloodstock services, pin hooking, and private race management.
Soul Driver the leader, though. Soul Driver in front.
Experience the fun, excitement, and exclusive access of racehorse ownership with Bloom Racing. Forming racing partnerships now. Get in on the action at bloomracing.com.
Kentucky Downs kicks off a unique 5-day all-grass race meet in September. Live racing September 3rd, 8th, 10th, 11th, and 15th. And the stakes are high with $7.8 million in purses over the 5 days, an average of $1.56 million each day. Kentucky Breds will run for maiden special weight purses of $130,000 and allowance purses of $145,000. Maidens not bred in Kentucky will compete for $58,000 with top allowance for non-Kentucky Breds at $67,000. Learn more at KentuckyDowns.com.
It all started with a dream. A dream to be the best. To breed the best. To race the best. And to stand the best. Windstar Farm. Dedicated to the dream.
Now is the perfect time to own a Kentucky bred and race in Kentucky. Kentucky breds win 70% of the greatest stakes in North America, and it's obvious that Kentucky breds start with a clear advantage. But there's more. Over $8 million in additional purse money is available at the five Kentucky tracks for horses eligible for the Kentucky Thoroughbred Development Fund. Kentucky is a good place to race your Kentucky bred. Come home to Kentucky and make a start. Learn more at KentuckyBred.org.
This is Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
Racing for the top of the stretch. Hidden Garden's under pressure. Lady Soul comes away with the lead and turns for home in front. Lady Soul, the leader off the turn. To Be Famous to the attack on the outside in second. Crown Princess in behind with Nepali Spirit. Battling on is Hidden Garden down inside at the mid-stretch marker now. Lady Soul's digging down deep. Fending off the challenger To Be Famous so far, but time is running out. 100 yards left. Lady Soul, half length in front. To Be Famous has desperately been trying to get by, but cannot do it. And Lady Soul repels that challenge to win it by two. To Be Famous ran out of gas second. Nepali Spirit was third, and Hidden Garden fourth.
Travis Stone with the call of the fifth race at Churchill last Thursday, June 15th. Lady Soul repelling all challengers to give our special guest here on Trainer Talk, Rodolphe Brisset, his first career win since deciding to go out on his own in early April. Julien Leparue was aboard. You heard in the first half of the show how special that was for Rodolphe. We are going to continue this visit in just a couple of moments, but before we do, we do want to remind you that on Sunday, July 2nd, that's right, coming up this coming, two Sundays from now, you can watch, wager, and win on the 158th running of the Queen's Plate. And if you're not familiar with the Queen's Plate, it is the first jewel in Canada's Triple Crown and the longest continuously run stakes race in North America. Woodbine going to guarantee the early pick four pool at $150,000 and the late pick four at $300,000. On plate day, Woodbine will also be offering 20-cent bet minimums on all triactor, superfecta, pick three, and pick four pools. That's $600,000 in guaranteed pick four and pick five pools that you can share in. At least if you can say pick five, you can share in that pool. And should be a lot of fun. Going to be a great day of racing. It all takes place Sunday, July 2nd. For more information, just visit queensplate.com. And, of course, JT, you and I will be north of the border to bring people exclusive coverage of the Queen's Plate.
Yeah, really looking forward to getting back to Canada and Woodbine and all of our friends up there. It was a great experience last year. Sir Dudley Diggs got the chrome for Mr. Ramsey, and so we'll see what happens this year.
He's Jude Feld. I'm Mike Penna. We are coming to you from our Jimmy John's of Lexington broadcast studios, and you're listening to Trainer Talk presented by Fasig Tipton. Our special guest, Rodolphe Brisset, just told you about his first winner this past Thursday at Churchill, Lady Soul. Rodolphe, a little trip down memory lane with that race call from Travis Stone. That had to sound pretty good.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah, that was, you know, we were expecting to be loose on the lead, and we got some company, and then, you know, that filly dig in pretty nicely. So, you know, it was fun.
You talked in the first half of the show about that relationship that you had with Hall of Fame trainer Bill Mott and his entire team, and how difficult it was to tell him that you wanted to go out on your own. How long did it take him to call or text you after that race and congratulate you? Because I'm sure he did.
Yeah, he did. I don't think he actually knew that the same day. He did the next day when he saw the little article, I think, on the Daily Racing Form. And he sent me a little text, and actually a lot of people, he was kind of very overwhelming to, you know, having all those comments and texts. So, you know, I guess the first one is always the most difficult one to get out the way, and then now we can focus on winning a couple more.
Yeah, it's nice when people support you, and of all the trainers, the new trainers that have come on the scene recently, and we've had quite a few on this program. I think you were the most highly anticipated of the group. I think everybody seemed to be talking about you as far back as Saratoga. I heard people say, wait till that guy goes out on his own. so you didn't wait too long.
Like I just said in the first, when we talked in the first part of the show, you know, you have to remember, I was lucky enough to be around a lot of good horses, and then the whole team and Bill always kind of, you know, you travel with those horses, and Bill doesn't always go for some of the great ones, so you have to deal with the press. It's very important. You have to keep it's something, and I know not everybody like it, but you have to deal with the press. It's very important for the racing, for the image and everything. So, you know, the fact to be put in front like this by everybody, and first by the horses, because they, you know, without them I will never be. So I think it's one thing. It's why people were expecting me to, you know, and I have maybe high expectation on us. So, you know, we have to. It's maybe a little extra pressure, but like I say, it's a good one.
I'm glad you brought up learning to work with the media, Rodolph, because that's something that I know when Chris McCarron was running his jockey school, that was one thing he had the young riders do, was take a course on how to deal with the media. And when you came to the United States and you started working with guys like Biancone and then with Bill Mott, there were a lot of things that you had to learn, a lot of aspects to training racehorses. But one of those is how to deal with the media. Tell me a little bit about that and how important that is for a young trainer to learn how to handle themselves in front of the media.
I mean, you know, where I learned the best is actually, you know, watching and listening, those trainer, Hall of Fame trainer. You don't even, you know, of course, being close with Bill Mott, it helps, but you got to read article about, you know, Todd Pletcher sounds like he's, you know, I don't know him very well, but he's a classy guy, and you know, you got to go with the Hall of Fame, and you learn from them. And then, you know, I'm friends with Johnny Velasquez, who is very classy guy too. So yeah, I think you have to try to kind of learn from everybody, like to kind of sponge from them, like, and it's the way where you can actually where you learn how to handle it. And then finally, you know, you can make a couple of mistakes, but I think it's you have to do it when it's your time to do it. You know, live TV, you know, article about you know, press in general. You just have to, you know, go ahead and do it. You know,
what was the one aspect of training horses, or the one thing that you would say was probably the most challenging or the most difficult for you to learn?
I would say, I mean, I have a tendency to, I mean, for my case, I kind of try to rush something, not trying to rush her off, but if I have an idea, I kind of try to, you know, to rush it to the point where to see if I'm right or wrong. And I really like to be right. So, you know, I think one of the best feeling, and I think it give you a lot of reward is when you decide to do something with one horse, and it may be the total opposite to what you've been doing, but you think that thing's going to work, and then next thing I know, boom, it works. It's very, very rewarding. You try, I don't know if you have to, you can't talk too much about it because, you know, you can't be arrogant about it, but it's one thing. I used to be, you know, when I on my 20s, I used to be like, oh, this horse needs this, like a little too quick. And then now it's more approach thing, you know, like I'm going to give myself a day or two and see where we're standing. And then from there, maybe, you know, make a change. But that's one thing. It was my biggest challenge, is to try to don't rush an idea, and give the horse a chance to show me what he wants to do first, and then if we have to make a change, make it. But you know, you got to learn what the horse wants first, and then from there, if you need anything change or any help, that's where your job is to make that change. But That was maybe the biggest thing for me. But I guess being around, you know, Liana in Belmont, who she's a very, very good assistant trainer, I've been working for Bill longer than me. She's very good horseman. And then, you know, having Bill too around, it's, you learn that, you know.
A lot of times those ideas come to you in strange places or through different people or things that happen, and they can really make a difference to a horse. I mean, like you said, maybe you're doing the exact opposite thing with a horse and you go, man, you know, I should take that horse back off the pace and have him make one run or whatever. That happened to me in the men's room one day. So you never know where those ideas are going to come from. And I understand the anticipation of wanting to see if that works and the success when it comes, it does feel good that you came up with this idea, you know, and it's okay, I think, to make adjustments on the fly. Alan Jerkins was the greatest at it. I mean, he was the king of adjustments. He was always tinkering with his horses, you know, and he had a great career.
Yeah, we never really stop seeking. Like it's you always try to see if I do that, if I do this, if I, you know, it's a constant think about it. Like you always you know, it's, if you're not happy with one horse, you just have to find out why and what can fix it, you know. So it can be tiring because your mind never really stops, but in the same time, it's why we, you know, it's what we do, you know.
Rodolphe, it sounds like you were very observant of everything that Bill Mott was doing as you were working with him for that nearly decade long period. It sounds like you were very cognizant of all the moves that he was making. What's the best training job or the most memorable training job that you ever saw Bill Mott do?
I would say two different things. When Emollient won the grade one in Kinland, the 3 years old grade one in Kinland on the poly, she ran in a Gulfstream Park Oaks 7 days earlier. I was in Dubai with Royal Delta. I flew back from Dubai and then took my car and drove to Kinland beginning of April. And the horses, they come in and I'm looking at Emollient in front of me. And I call the boss and I say, why Emollient is here? And he said, so we are seven days out of the Ashland. The race was the Ashland. And she just ran the day before. And I'm like, so what are you going to do? He said, oh, well, you know, get on her and see how she's acting and see how she's doing, and then maybe I'm running her back in 7 days. So we're talking about running from a finishing dead last bit by 30 legs on the dirt on a Saturday, and then run her 7 days later in a grade one when he was a grade two the week before. And I mean, that's, you know, we stay in touch the whole week, every day we talk. And you know, I was lucky enough to know Emollient very good, so I was always kind of rider. So he ended up making the choice to run her, and then she drew the 12 or the 13 on the outside. He was a man and 16, and you know, Mike Smith was on her, and he dropped the rein, and she won the gate to wire. I mean, it's pretty amazing to be able to run off that quick back on a grade one and won. That was he was very impressive to me. This is definitely one of my memories, you know, one of the good memories. I mean, we have many. I would say one of the other movies, when Flat Out won the Seeger Mile 3 weeks before, that's awesome. So he ran the classic, and, you know, after he didn't, you know, the horse didn't really run as expected in the classic. And Mr. Prescott, you know, the owner was thinking about having, you know, retiring and having him as a stallion. You know, he won a couple of red ones, so he's a nice horse. So, you know, they came up to the barn after the Breeders' Cup Classic, and you can feel they were, you know, they were disappointing of of the horse, the way he ran, but at the same time, the horse was safe, and they were thinking about his future as a stallion. And I will always remember the boss coming in the conversation with Mr. Prescott and told him, said, you know, that horse always run a better race for me as a miler than a mile and a quarter. And he pretty much were able to talk for 10-15 minutes with Mr. Prescott, and having the horse in a plane to Payson. The horse trained in Florida for 3 weeks, and he came back in New York and won the Cigar Mile. And I thought that was one of the most impressive, you know, move from Bill, because, you know, sometimes if the owner have his made mine and wants to retire the horse and wants to, you know, wants to give him a shot as a stallion, it's very difficult to go against it. And I don't think the boss went against it, but he did give why he's got his mind. And we're talking about 2 hours after the Breeders' Cup Classic, and the horse just got beat by, you know, 15 legs. And 2 hours later, he come up with that idea and said, let's take him down to Payson and train the horse and then see how he's doing. And then come back 3 weeks later and won the Cigar Mile. Ooh, it's a very important race. If you have a stallion prospect, the Cigar Mile, it's a really, really cool race to win. So this is maybe the two moments where I recall very, you know, it would be my two quickest recall, I would say.
So trainers can run horses back quick and win, huh?
I guess if you name Bill Mott and you know what you're doing, you know, of course. Yeah. I mean that filly Emollient, it was pretty, you know, I was not air when she got, you know, I was in Dubai, I was watching the race from Dubai, and I always been very high on her, and she got really, like, she got bit, like, no, we didn't have much excuse to, you know, like, sometimes it's just a bad day, I guess. And when he pulled her in a plane, he jogged her. The next morning, he jogged her on the road. She was sent. He pulled her in a plane, and he, you know, I'm parking in front of 25 in Kinlon, and I saw her name on the door, and I'm like, what's up with that? And he said, oh, maybe I'm gonna run her back in a Ashland. I was like, well, 7 day rest, run her back in a Grade One when you just get beat in a Grade Two. That's pretty boring, I guess. You know? But, you know, it's why. I think when she won the race, somebody from the Blood House asked me something about, you know, why Bill Mott run her back that quick, and I say, I guess that's why he's a Hall of Fame trainer. You know, it's what, you know, those guys, they do. You know, they know what they're doing. They know the sources, and you have to learn from them. And when I say them, of course, we talk about Bill first, because is my, you know, is the one I work with the longest and everything. But, you know, I'm sure it's the same case for all those Hall of Fame and good trainer, you know.
Could you ever see yourself making that same type of move with a horse, Rodolphe?
Well, yes. You know, I think, it, you know, first I got to try to get those horses in the barn, but that's not easy, you know. You know, and I guess it's easier to say it on the phone than to doing it. But, I mean, you know, I think if they show you the right sign, if you're pretty confident, you know, you got to trust yourself. I mean, you know, if you got to trust yourself. So if you feel like it's, you have to do it, or it's, you know, if you have no, it's your call. And I think that's why it can make you different, you know, like make you a different trainer to the just a normal regular guy, you know. It's, you gotta be able to make those calls, and it's not easy. It's for sure pressure. You definitely will end up making the, you know, the wrong one. You know, you gotta learn how, you gotta trust you. You gotta learn how to make the choice, and you gotta learn how to say, okay, that was my mistake, but to learn from it. You know, I think.
Yeah, you have to own it if you do it, but it, you know, it can be tremendously rewarding when you do something unique, and you are good with the press, though, saying that's why Bill Mott's in the Hall of Fame, because he can run back in a week and win. I mean, you learned a lot of things from Bill Mott, but the fact that he's so camera shy and press shy, I think that was great for you. And now you have all those experiences. behind you, you know what can be done, what can't be done, and that's got to give you a huge edge as you move forward in your career.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's what definitely, you know, a big advantage for me. And then, you know, the riding parts, you know, I can get on those horses myself. And, you know, I mean, even if I say I don't really like the word lucky, I will say I consider myself pretty lucky to be able to have all those little advantage and then try to put them together. I don't think that means I'm gonna be good, but I have a lot to prove, I think. But it definitely put me on the right path to try to be as good as people expect, you know.
Visiting with trainer Rodolphe Brisé here on Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton on the Horse Racing Radio Network. If you miss any portion of this show, head to our website, horseracingradio.net, and check out the podcast at your leisure. You can also do that, Horse Racing Radio Network on iTunes. Rodolphe, they say that you should never ask a two-part question, but I'm going to go ahead and do it here. First of all, how many horses, ideally, would you like to have in your stable when you get things fully up and running? And secondly, how do you plan to go about building your stable?
The number, I don't have a number. You know, if you have the right people, if I'm able to build the right team, you know, I don't think it's limitless. You know, I mean, you know, you gotta think big if you want to be big. So no number in mind. Just you know, and if you want to find the good horses, you have to try them. So the only way to try them is to get horses in the barn. So if you say, oh, I'm going to train 20 and I'm going to sit on 20, it's not the way you find good horses. You know, it's limitless. I think, you know, you gotta. I think the most important is the team. You know, you gotta build somebody around you. You know, you got to have the right people around you and build a good team. And then when you build a good team, horses, they got to come in, I think, even more. And then, you know, right now we got 20. We win between 20 and 25, which, you know, it's a good number, I think, after 8-10 weeks doing it. But I got some ID. I got to sell myself a little bit more. So, you know, now we can the saddle very good with 20-25 horses. I got the right people around. So, you know, I think you got to go step by step. I would say 25 now. And if in 6 months from now it's 50, that would mean we're doing good, you know.
Where are you going to base?
Well, right now, I don't want to make the mistake to try to split or move too much at the beginning. I think it's very important to, like I said, to have a good foundation. So, you know, we are in Kinlan right now. You know, we can, over the summer, we're going to get, you know, try to get 20, 30 horses. And then in November, moving to Florida, try to get a barn in Payson Park. And so that will be 20, 25 horses in Payson. And I'm trying to see if I may want to apply and get some stall in Tampa, you know, to try to get the barn to 30 horses, 35 horses for the winter. And then the goal will be to try to go to New York with that barn, that Tampa barn, to try to go to Belmont in a sprint next year. Because if you go to New York, you open a new contact number, or like you open a total different new ball game, you know, because the money is good there. And people wants to be there. So I think if we come back in Kinlan, then we can try to get a good number in Kinlan, and then having a small string in, you know, 10-12 in Belmont, and it will be idol, I think, for me. That's what I'm seeking, and hopefully I can reach this, you know.
What is it about Payson that makes that such a good place to train? I know Bill's been there for a very, very long time, Rodolphe.
Well, it's a good place to train, but my wife loves the place, so I have no choice. No, it's a really good dirt track. It's quiet. If you want to give a break, those over the year, I just grade one horses stake off. They really trail there. You can give them a month and a half off there without being in a farm. You can do light training. I mean, it's just the living style. You know, Florida in the winter get very crowded down to Gulfstream, and so you know it's I don't know. It's really, you really enjoy training there. You know, you have no pressure, and then the horses, they love it. At the end of the day, that's why you have to think about the horses. So they really love it.
Rodolphe, are you on social media? Do you have a website? Any of those types of things that so many of the young trainers today are doing to engage owners?
Well, I don't have a website yet, but we do have a Facebook page and a Twitter. You know, we just try to stay in contact like this. I'm pretty sure, you know, if we grow enough in the next 6 months, a website will be the next step, you know. I think my first idea is let's win a lot of races, and then like this, that's the best, you know, the best commercial you can do. It's win races. It's not a website or a Facebook page. You know, it's good to keep people updated, but it does not why it's going to make you having more horses coming in and, you know, successful. It's you need to win races. So, you know, just put the horses where they can win, and then from there they do the rest, you know.
All right, Rodolphe, only about 2 minutes left before we have to wrap things up. We like to end the program by letting our listeners know something about trainers that they might not ordinarily get to know. So it's five fast facts to know about Rodolphe Brisé. Okay, and I'm going to ask you five quick questions. You go ahead and answer them, and we'll let people know a little bit something different about you. The first one, what is your favorite French food?
Bœuf bourguignon.
Your favorite sport other than horse racing?
Golf.
All right. You can own one pet. What's it going to be? A horse. There you go. How about your favorite movie?
Avatar.
Okay. And your number one goal you want to achieve as a horse trainer, what is it?
Be as successful I can be, and you know try to win as many races I can. You know, I think it's, you know, I don't want people to remember my name because it's a difficult name to say. I want people to remember my name because we won races.
There he is, Rodolphe Brisé, here on Trainer Talk, presented by Fasic Tipton. One goal, win as many races as we can. He's off to a great start, having already saddled his first winner. Rodolphe, can't thank you enough for taking the time, my friend. It's been a delight to hear your story, and we'll look forward to catching up soon. Good luck.
Thank you, guys. It was fun.
All right, Rodolphe Brisé here on Trainer Talk. Good guy.
Yeah, I'm betting on him.
He's got to be one of the favorites, right?
He's going to make it big in the game.
Yeah, he's going to be tough. All right, don't forget, if you missed any portion of the show, head over to our website, horseracingradio.net. Check out the podcast. You can also do that, Horse Racing Radio Network on iTunes. It's all there for you each and every week in every Trainer Talk show and our Jock Talk shows, which air every Tuesday here on the network. Been a lot of fun for our special guest, Rodolphe Brisé, for our producer, Lee Delapina, for Jude Feld. I'm Mike Pennell. We'll talk to you next time. Thanks for listening to Trainer Talk, presented by Fasic Tipton.